Hello and welcome to the first ever End Credits Radio Show on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Jenna.
And Candace.
And End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and you'll be able to hear it here every Wednesday at 8 a.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week, for our inaugural show, will be the superhero movie Wonder Woman. But that's in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the things that have been making the movie news this week. And for our first show, we're going to be talking about Jessica Chastain's comments at Cannes about how she's disturbed about the portrayal of women in the movies she saw at the festival. And speaking of disturbing, we'll talk about the reaction of some of the men in the world have had to the idea that the Alamo Drafthouse is hosting women-only screenings of Wonder Woman. Oh my goodness. But first... why is Rotten Tomatoes ruining everyone's good time? Apparently, some people at major Hollywood studios are of the opinion that the movie aggregation review site is responsible for some clunkers like Pirates of the Caribbean 5 and Baywatch. If it weren't for those pesky kids and critics at Rotten Tomatoes, Candace, that movie would be like, those movies would be so successful.
Yes. Yeah. It's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, I saw the trailer for Baywatch and thought, wow, this is high art. Let me go check it out online and see what other people think. And then I realized that it wasn't high art.
What?
How would I have known without reading the reviews online?
I know. It's crazy. Jenna, what do you think?
Yeah. Automatically you hear Baywatch movie. Okay. I'm running out there. through the sand towards the water, right? In my red bikini. But... here we go, Rotten Tomatoes. Just throw in those tomatoes before you can even get to the theater.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think people forget how awful Baywatch was. Like, I'm a 90s kid. Candace, you're a 90s kid. I'm too polite to ask a lady her age, Jen. I don't know how old you are.
But... oh, I'm a 70s kid.
Okay. But
I think I'm an 80s kid. I don't know. That's what I thought. Let's just... well, like,
but you remember Baywatch when it was on TV.
Oh, sure do.
And, the whole point of it was supposed to be, you know... eye candy, male gaze kind of thing. And I couldn't even sit through an episode when I was a teenager. So I was like the target audience and it was terrible. And I don't know what made people think that you throw in Dwayne Johnson, you throw in the 21 Jump Street kind of vibe, and then automatically you have a hit on your hands.
See, well, I think some of this might have to do with what we're going to talk about in the future too. I notice that the Baywatch movie has a lot of half clothed men. And it feels like from watching the trailers that it's certainly more targeted to women and or men who like to look at other unclothed men. So
Zac Efron's a good looking man.
People have told me so. I don't agree myself, but I trust other people's point of view. But so I think that's part of the reason too is that the original series, you're right, was all about the male gaze. It was all about men watching women run in bathing suits and imagining themselves to be David Hasselhoff.
He's a cool guy, as Guardians of the Galaxy reminded us.
Yeah.
I'm saying I was a child of the 80s, but that means I'm born in the 80s. So when I watched Baywatch, I was probably younger than you guys, and I thought it was fine and dandy. Like, that's a good program for maybe an 8 or 9 year old to watch.
It meant very little. It was just having fun on the beach at 8.
Again, not exactly an endorsement of the show.
We were having adventures with like these Barbies, and I'm all
that's
for
a great
that.
Point. Yeah,
yeah.
They were Barbies. They were lifeguard Barbies. What about pirates? I mean, the difference I think with pirates is that for a while that has been more about the worldwide audience because of Johnny Depp and the love for the character Jack Sparrow. I mean, you look at the returns for the last couple of Pirates movies, it's definitely teetered more to a world audience versus an American audience. So I do wonder what made perhaps people at Disney thought that this time it was going to be any different.
Yeah, that I don't know. I'm not surprised that it's not doing well. Even people who enjoyed the first film, maybe the first two or three films, still wonder what, like, we don't need more. We had enough. On top of that, you know, we're in this this world where people are making choices with their dollars. And I think more and more people are making choices to maybe not support something that Johnny Depp does. So
you think maybe his personal life?
I think maybe that that has bled over a little bit. Now, I suspect this film, it was all made and done long before any of the information about his...
cotton balls.
Sure.
Well,
anger
issues. I'm out of the loop here. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of deliberately removed myself a bit from being aware of the popular culture as much as I used to be.
Get out.
Like, yeah.
Welcome back.
Thanks. it was actually a very hilarious adventure to get me into the theater to watch Wonder Woman, because I like identify as a resistant audience member by this point. And I took a bus to the theater. And then I went back home on the bus. Like, I missed the theater, and I was like, I guess I don't want to watch this movie enough to just go. But I made it, like, last night, the last showing of 70 millimeter, by the way.
Wow. Ooh. Well, we appreciate your dedication.
Okay, we'll talk about
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah. Thanks. But as for the pirate, the sinking ship that Disney just won't get off... Again, I'm all for the internet helping you to decide before you spend your money. Like, it's a democratization.
Right. But, I mean, that's just it. And, you know, I go back to Siskel and Ebert, who devised a system, thumbs up, thumbs down. This is way before the internet. But it was their intention. Like, you either like something or you don't like something. Mm-hmm. I'm making the hand gestures even though we're on radio. But
yeah,
it helps. But, you know, you get thumbs up. We like the movie, you should go see the movie. Thumbs down, we hate the movie, don't go see it. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Rotten Tomatoes is like the modern equivalent of that. The one thing I would take away is that it's sort of become its own sort of marketing thing, because you have studios slapping on the certified fresh sticker when it comes out on Blu-ray and DVD too now. So studios love it's one of those yin-yang things. They love it and they hate it. When it works, they love it. When it doesn't work, they hate it.
I do appreciate something like Rotten Tomatoes, though, because I don't think that the Siskel and Ebert thumbs up or thumbs down is enough for me to decide whether or not to go see a film, right? I want to know, am I going to see a popcorn flick right now? Am I going to see something that's going to leave me thinking at the end of it? What, you know, just... Should I go or shouldn't I go is not enough for me to decide whether or not I want to go see a film anymore. Right. It might have been at another time, but I think there are so many entertainment choices now that I need to know a little bit more about what I'm going to walk into. Now, to be fair, I actually don't really read Rotten Tomatoes or reviews. I tend to read reviews after I've seen the film.
Right. Same with me.
Because I don't really want to taint my own view of it. But sometimes there are some films that I go... I don't know, maybe I might, you know, and I'll take the opportunity to look into it a little bit more, but mostly I've already decided whether or not I want to go see a film, and I want to go in without any sort of preconceived notions of what I'm going to...
And it's kind of arbitrary, too, because what makes a thing positive, what makes it negative, you know, if you're taking it like an 800-word review or something.
Totally, but you do get those sound clips, too, so it's like a micro-hyper... intense product of everyone's consciousness on Earth.
Yeah.
So that should give you sense.
Yes. Yeah. Speaking of sound clips, we're going to go into topic number two, and I want to play it as she said it. I don't want to butcher her words, but this was Jessica Chastain at a press conference. She was on the jury at the Cannes Film Festival this year, and she had some pretty strong opinions about women on film.
Do believe that if you have female storytelling, you also have more authentic female characters. This is the first time I've watched 20 films in 10 days, and I love movies. And the one thing I really took away from this experience is how the world views women from the female characters that I saw represented. And it was quite disturbing to me, to be honest. And there are some exceptions, I will say. But for the most part, I was surprised with the representation of female characters on screen in these films. And I do hope that when we include more female storytellers, we will have more of the women that I recognize in my day-to-day life.
So you heard some of the men there going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But so I will let you guys open up because as the females in the room, you know, is she, first of all, is she right? And second of all, is it, you know, maybe better or worse now? I mean, than it's ever been, or are we just particularly self-aware about it now?
Yeah, I think we are. We have to hand it to someone like her to stand up for the female actress contingent. Oh, sorry. I mean, actor. We don't say actress anymore. As an actor myself, I can relate to the feeling of there's no roles for women. Mm-hmm. There's like 20 roles for every one role for women. So I can understand her frustration. I know, especially with Oscar winners, afterwards they kind of lose steam and drop off the map is a typical pattern because they have that fire and then it fizzles away and they don't get to have the kind of legs that someone like Scarlett Johansson does,
yeah,
who wasn't like just taken by the Academy or critical circles for one specific role. And it is a very big deal that certain roles do get recognized with awards, like the kind of role that she played in Zero Dark Thirty. I wasn't a fan of that movie either, so I'm not sure how.
Well, you people might think that's a bit of an exaggeration, but you said about like 20 parts for every male part, but there are actually statistics to back it up. That 31.4% of speaking parts from the top 100 films of 2015 were women. 32% of those films had a female lead or a female secondary lead.
That's appalling.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see numbers like that, you might be thinking, oh, poo-poo, liberal, Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, when you break down the numbers, less than one in three speaking parts in the top 100 movies are women?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, listening to Jessica Chastain, I feel like she had a more cutting thing to say, and she was really trying to use measured words to make herself not sound like an angry woman, which of course then we come off just because I listened to it and I feel like she's really sort of struggling to figure out how to say what she's trying to say. Now I haven't really stayed up to date with Con information, so I'm not sure what films were showing. I do know that Sofia Coppola won, what, only the second time ever a female director has won.
To the same female, too.
Yeah.
And the first time in 45 years, because the last woman, and I wrote it down, was Yulia Soltseva. Butchered her name, but she's Russian, so it's not entirely my fault. But 1961, best director.
Yeah, so I'm not really sure what the other films, what they were about, what the subject matter was, but I feel like maybe within some of those, there might have been some really terrible things happening, right? I hear her, and I can hear that there's so much more she wants to say, and she's trying so hard to be diplomatic.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit frustrating, because I really want to dig into what she's saying. I'm like, what is she saying? So last year I started the 52 Films by Women Challenge, which I'm not going to say I've failed it because I've dramatically increased the number of films I've watched by women directors. Mm-hmm. I have not managed to do 52 in 1 year. I think I've done, over the course of last year to today, I think I've probably managed about 25 or so. Because frankly, it's difficult to find women directors. You know, I really only have Netflix to look for. Unfortunately, here in Guelph, here in Canada, in North America, there are very few places to rent films anymore. Yeah. And I just have my Netflix. I don't have any of the other variety of things that you can do to watch films. So I have to really sort of search. And what's interesting, and I think what's probably making it so challenging for me, is that women tend to make human dramas that are very character driven. And so I will agree with Jessica Chastain that the storytelling by the women in all the films that I have watched has been so layered and so complex, and people who have multi dimensions and varieties of reasons to take actions, and it's been really interesting. But at the same time, I only want to watch so many films like that.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes I'm like, I'm just looking for a
Baywatch
horror film.
Yeah.
And there are three Baywatch horror films on Netflix.
I'm just looking for Baywatch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't even need to watch, I think, the movies that she's talking about at Cannes to know, because there's just Baywatch and Pirates of the Caribbean and a very limited number of actually enticing films for me to go see. I wasn't even sold by Wonder Woman. I've become that resistant. But
I'll quote one of the critics, because Kyle Buchanan of Vulture wrote a piece after she said this. He said, there are three movies that he could remember where the female lead was treated as little more than a sex object to satiate the men in their leading roles. So, I mean, I think that's sort of par for the course when you're talking about just about any type of movies or any string of movies, is that the woman is there to be the companion or the lust object or the love object, and she's not, you know, the Bechdel test, you know, that old standby. I mean, I think we kind of gone overboard about the Bechdel test. I feel like it's almost cliche, speaking as a man, obviously, but I think we kind of go overboard about the Bechdel test, and just, you know, how about just having a multidimensional woman? One multidimensional woman.
A character who starts in one place, learns things, changes, and ends in a different place.
Exactly.
Well, isn't the, like, number one moviegoer, like, 17-year-old male? Or something like
I don't
around
think that's
there?
True anymore. I really think that people who go to the theater are our age now, our age and older. I mean, I went to see Wonder Woman yesterday, and I did not feel like the oldest person in the room, not by a long shot. And I mean, I'm not terribly old, but either way, I'm not a teenager either. And I don't think that there were many people much younger than me in the audience. There were some like young kids who were there with their parents, but I mean, movies are expensive, man. Teenagers can't afford that anymore.
Plus, there's Netflix, and teenagers are lazy, and they don't want to leave their house, right? I
mean, let's make some broad generalizations about teenagers.
Maybe I'm thinking in, like, 1981 statistics or something.
Yeah. Sure. Like, no, and you might be right, and that was, you know, a time where you go to kill a couple hours, you go to the movies, or you go to the arcade. And, you know, it's what you were talking about before, where there's so many different things to do now that, you know, you don't have to get on the bus and go out to the movie theater, and especially when it's, like, $13 for the 3D version of the movie, and then it's popcorn that's like another $13, and maybe you're gonna go out for dinner, and that's another.
The VIP cinema viewing was $25 a person, and that was just for a regular screening in a smaller screen, just with bigger seats.
Yeah.
So and alcohol, right? The VIP is the licensed as well.
Yeah. Well, access alcohol.
Yeah.
I don't think they give it away for free.
Well, no.
I had one VIP experience, and it was like way back when it first came out. It was like X-Men Origins Wolverine. It was because like that was the one screening time that I was there at that time, and it's like, all right, so maybe that's why I haven't gone back.
I've gone to too many of those through my life.
Well, speaking of issues with the ladies, this made a bit of news and a bit of a, I don't know, it's controversial for some reason, that the Alamo Drafthouse, which is this, if you don't know the Alamo Drafthouse, it's a theater chain of it's sort of art housey cinema, though they do show big movies, but they do a lot of like special screening events. They have meals with their films. They pair a nice meal with the movie. They do all kinds of like little nichey things like that. And so someone at the Alamo Drafthouse had the not so brilliant idea, or brilliant idea, depending on the case, maybe ladies only Wonder Woman screenings, where the staff were going to be all women, and you can only go if you're a woman. Apparently, this is controversial. and this genius, the name of Jack Posobiec, who also works for Rebel Media.
so color me surprised.
Yeah, he had the brilliant idea of, well, there should be, if there's going to be a ladies-only Wonder Woman screening, there should be a men-only Star Wars screening. And I'll start this off by saying there are two things wrong with this. Number one is, Lucasfilm, that owns Star Wars, is run by a woman. And number two is that the last two Star Wars movies have featured female heroes because there have been so many Star Wars fans who are women or girls over the years and have been drastically underrepresented in these films. So here we have this individual, basically, knowing full well that this is probably not going to become reality. But I mean, this just seems so silly to me. I don't know how you guys think.
It always shocks me when people can't like identify a minority group, like something that's very obviously a minority group. And fair, like, should they're also a target audience and it's another way to sell movie tickets? That's the only like comment I have about it. But how could that bother people? Feel like men are not represented in film.
Yeah, like it's not like it's a rare thing to like a Wonder Woman's on 4,000 screens. So if you want to find a Wonder Woman screen
just
and you're
go
a man,
to the cinema next door.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have so many thoughts about this. Primarily, you know what? I love the Alamo Drafthouse, and I love that. Humans seem to have a lot of trouble with the Alamo Drafthouse. The number of times that people freak out because they can't text inside the theater Alamo. I'm like, what is wrong? I don't understand.
And it says right there, no texting, and you're out.
First of all, there shouldn't be texting in any cinema, so
I don't disagree.
I don't understand why the Alamo just insists on normal behavior at movies. And the people who go to the Alamo seem so incredibly offended by having to behave normally like you would in a polite society.
Yeah.
Like, what is wrong with people, just in general?
Last time I was at the Stratford Festival, it was like a matinee, and they come on the PA like 12 times before the show starts. Like, turn off your cell phones, turn off yourself. They say a lot politer than that, turn off your cell phones. And then the play starts, and there must have been like six different cell phones that went off in the first like 20 minutes. And it's just like, really? Like, so an usher is going to have to come up to you personally in the theater and say, turn off your cell phone. That's neither here nor there. But
it's like a mental condition that's plaguing our society.
It is. And I think that's almost a whole other topic, too. But I mean, there was obviously an appeal for this because all these screenings sold out.
Yeah.
And I don't think women were going, like, finally, no men. I think it was just like, yeah, this is, like, a female superhero. This is kind of a big deal. It's going to be fun, ladies only. As any kind of group that, you know, going out ladies only, ladies night, I understand those are fun. Again, having not participated in a ladies night myself. But it just seems... And then on top of it all, as somebody's pointed out, there have been, like, men's only groups for centuries.
Yeah.
Like the Catholic Church, but not again. Neither here nor there. But I mean, someone like the Masons. The Masons had an open house on Saturday. Talk about, you know, a group men only. Yeah. They still segregate.
It's still men. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Totally. No one ever broke with the Catholic Church and was like, okay, we're the female only Catholic Church.
That would be great. Right? I'd love to see that. It's just I don't get it, and. The thing about the Star Wars, and then somebody was like, well, what about Spider-Man only? What about Thor movies, so men only? It's like, well, women don't like Thor? I thought women don't like Spider-Man? Come on, what's...
Yeah.
The point isn't that men don't like Wonder Woman. The point is that, you know, we're creating a nice, pleasant environment for women. You know, give them a couple of hours of respite from the men. I understand that. And it just, it seems like the idea of women... being without men is like terribly frightening to some men.
Well, and I think in this case too, it's not just the women being without men; it's the women being without men at a traditionally male-dominated place, like a comic book movie, right? Like if it was a women-only screening of that film that's coming out in a couple of weeks about the all the girls, whatever, I can't remember the name.
Oh, Rough Night?
Rough Night, yeah. Right? No man is going to complain if there's a woman. In fact, they're probably just going to assume that it's always going to be women only in the theater, right? And they're not going to be bothered by that. The problem is that this is women who want to go see their movie, their thing, and I still sort of come back to this whole the fake geek girl problem, right? Where guys need to be validated that women can't actually like these things.
Yeah.
Because if they did like these things, then the reason that they're not liking you
Right.
Is because there's something fundamentally wrong with you, not because you like comic books. There's nothing wrong with liking comic books. That's not the reason that you have no play.
I feel like the nerd culture has been a little bit appropriated too much. Mm-hmm. Like, there's now a kind of geek pride. And, you know, the Big Bang Theory, this is so unrelated, but I kind of feel like, isn't this making fun of smart people, like, in a derogatory way? I don't know.
No, and I think that's, that. I mean, I've sort of come around on Big Bang a bit, but that was always something in the back of my mind with that show is that, you know, you can't like comic books and Babylon 5 and Star Trek and Star Wars and be socially, you know, functional and, you know.
You're on the periphery.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's truly bizarre, and I mean this whole situation is bizarre. One thing I'll say to sort of maybe tease into our review is that this kerfuffle came about before the line in the Wonder Woman movie where her and Steve Trevor are in the boat going back to the real world, and she's talking about how the Amazon philosophy, you don't need men to experience physical pleasure. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how some of these guys might be feeling about...
useless.
That, yeah, yes.
They're feeling useless.
Yes, exactly. So I think we've been feeling pretty useful ourselves so far in shedding some light on these issues. And so we're going to take a break and roll some music here. And I will introduce it by saying, it is Her Story of Glory from Do Make Say Think from their 2007 album, You're a History in Rust. And then we'll be right back with our review of Wonder Woman. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Believe that. And you, with your duty to simply give them a book,
no.
You didn't stand your ground. You didn't fight.
Because there was no chance of changing his mind.
This is Ares, and he's not going to allow a negotiation or a surrender. The millions of people you talked about, they will die.
We are going anyway.
You mean you were lying?
I'm a spy. That's what I do.
How do I know you're not lying to me right now?
I am taking you to the front. We are probably going to die. This is a terrible idea.
And that was from Wonder Woman, the new DC Extended Universe movie about the Amazonian warrior princess, starring Gal Gadot, Chris Pine, and it's directed by Patty Jenkins. And a huge success, obviously. I think a lot of people were expecting it to be a big moneymaker out there in the box office. So I know you, Candace, had some uncertainties with the film. So we'll start with you. What are your general thoughts about Wonder Woman, and how did you like the movie, or perhaps didn't like the movie?
Sure. Well, so let me preface by saying, I am 100% out of the DCEU. Period. I don't want to have anything to do with this extended universe. I think it is terrible. I do not... the entire aesthetic, storytelling, all of it about the DCEU is not for me. I love Zack Snyder films for the beautiful music videos they are.
Yeah.
And so...
Look what I'm wearing.
Yeah. Yes. So when I... when the Man of Steel came out, I was... uncomfortable the whole time and couldn't understand why, because I love Superman, mm-hmm. and I was conflicted, and it was a really challenging time for me, much like how, you know, when people are questioning their faith, I sort of felt like that, because I was like, what is going on here? I should be so excited. And then I saw the movie, and from the moment that Jonathan Kent died, mm-hmm. when that happened, because even watching it, I was like, I feel like there's something wrong here, and I don't know.
Spoiler alert for a 4-year-old movie.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Well, everybody knows that Pa Kent dies. So once he died, and in the way he died, and I said, oh, I get it. This is not Superman. This is not my Superman. This is not my universe. This is a whole different universe created by Zack Snyder and the people, and like all of that. They've created this whole other universe. I get it. I don't care. I'm not invested in this universe. Mm-hmm. So I managed through the rest of the film fine, whatever. I didn't care. I did not see Batman v Superman. I did see Suicide Squad because it looked like it was going to be a fun music video. And that's exactly what it was. It was 7 music videos. It was excellent, which is exactly what I wanted out of it, which is why nobody else enjoyed it, because that's not what they wanted out of it.
Exactly.
So I have been mostly cold on Wonder Woman the whole time because I'm like, it's not my universe. This is not, like, this is a whole alternate universe. I don't really care.
Yeah.
I'm kind of sad that Wonder Woman is going to be finally debuted on the big screen in this universe I don't care about.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, well, you know, whatever. I mean, it's important. It's an important film. I think it is important.
Yeah.
Trailers came, and I thought, looks all right. I mean, whatever. Like, I had basically zero desire to see this movie. Mm-hmm. There was no reason for me to go see it. But a lot of my friends were really excited about it. People were going to go see it. And then suddenly it became the movie that you had to see if you were remotely concerned about the state of women in the world today. Like, every single thing rests on the quality and the success of this film.
Yeah.
Which is just a lot to put on one movie.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I mean, I understand why, and I understand how important it is that it does well and that people need to understand, like, a woman can direct a big, giant blockbuster.
Shocker.
But I also think that it's okay that a woman can also make a bad movie. Now, let's just be real. I don't think she made a bad movie. I think Patty Jenkins did an amazing job and made an amazing, beautiful, action-filled, well-paced film.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't, I mean, I'm still completely out of this universe. I still don't care about this universe, these characters. They don't exist in the universe that I exist in.
But you seem to be very tied to, like, this original universe that I had absolutely no mm-hmm. awareness of, in distinction from this current universe that's being presented to me with Wonder mm-hmm. Woman. I like to know as little as I can about these DC comic book movies too.
Yeah.
Not that I can't appreciate why people have such extensive fandom of it and how that's being exploited. And
just to put it mildly.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does feel like even the female screenings of the movie are also endemic of the fact that it's just about, oh, women have to be championed in a new and significant way. Like, it's just the issue du jour, when really, you know, this wasn't that exciting of a character that was developed for me either.
So what did you like or didn't like about the movie, since it didn't work for you?
Well, overall, it is a good popcorn movie. I enjoyed that.
Which isn't your bag, I
kind
understand.
No, I can get into that. I could have watched Baywatch if that was what we were reviewing, and I'd probably have gotten into that too. But I was cheering for the good guys, you know, as you are meant to by these very formulaic narratives. But by the end, when they were doing the fight scene, I fell asleep. I totally fell asleep. I was like, no, okay, here is going to be the repetitive fight scene that doesn't end.
Can I come back to this?
Yes.
I know you haven't had a chance to offer your opinion, but frankly, we don't care about your opinion, Adam.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So I loved the sentence you said, I was cheering for the good guys, because this is my problem with the film. This is the problem. I watched it, and I had so many problems. You know, there's the beautiful scene that everybody thinks is like the most amazing scene, and it almost wasn't there. The no man's land. It's the giant reveal of Wonder Woman in her full costume,
mm-hmm.
doing the most amazing thing. She's just like to use a term that doesn't apply, a one-man army, mm-hmm. like walking across no man's land. And it is, it's like, it's
into
super...
Into the Germans.
Yeah, and it's super amazing and all this stuff, and she's so powerful. And the whole time, all I'm thinking as she's doing that and then getting to the other side and then killing all of these people and destroying churches, I'm thinking... Those aren't the bad guys. Those are just soldiers. Like, those are just people doing exactly the same thing as the people that you happen to be on the side of.
Right.
And I can no longer watch movies where we choose one side and decide that the other side is evil, even though they're literally just the same people. I just, I can't do it anymore.
No, but they're the Germans. And they're, like, the embodiment of everything that is evil that has ever plagued our... contemporary consciousness in the 21st century.
No, and I think if you're aware of the history of World War One, mm-hmm. or you know how that came about, basically because of like a series of dominoes of allegiances just falling into effect, and mm-hmm. the long term countdown to a full scale conflict of that size, and the imperialism and all that. Yeah, I mean that's what's problematic about World War One. It really wasn't a time of, you know, national
ideologies,
heroism.
Even. Yeah.
Yeah, and I do understand that that's problematic, and I will also acknowledge Jenna's criticism about the third act, because I mean it's
challenging.
It is, you know, we were talking about before the show. It's CGI barf. It's the scene where the German at the beginning of the film where the Germans land on Themyscira, where mm-hmm. you get to see all these. From what I understand, they were sort of athletes and women, experienced women archers and swordsmiths and all that. That, you know, seeing that, those were real women doing real awesome kick-ass stunts.
Yeah, and the horseplay.
Yeah.
It's
all the play. That was so good.
Yeah.
But, of course, you take Wonder Woman out of that, and she's now become kind of like a phallic extension of the idea of female power and has been appropriated by America or like men in
the
this men's war.
Yeah.
Although it is, I laugh the scene where they're in London and they're in like the war room and she kind of barges in and they're like, there's a woman in here. There's a woman in, like, what's this woman doing here?
I do think.
And they're trying to cover her right away.
Yeah.
I mean, Gal Gadot, I think, did an amazing job of showing both Diana's naivete about what the world is like and, you know, what the social acceptance of what men are and what women are.
Right.
She was totally naive to that, and she did a really good job of balancing that as well with the her own power.
Yeah.
Right? Where she wasn't barging in and saying, no, I have a right. She was just like, oh, you say I can't? Oh, all right. Well,
that's
I don't really...
Yeah.
That's weird. I'm still going to. No.
Right. Yeah, that's, I mean, I think she was really good. I think she deserves a lot of credit for really embodying Wonder Woman because, mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of talk about, well, she's too skinny and too this and she's not a great actress. And it's like, well, you know what? I think she surpassed all expectations. I mm-hmm. thought she was really good in this part. And I will go back, having did see Batman v Superman, the minute Wonder Woman arrives in full Wonder Woman regalia is probably the best moment in Batman v Superman, because otherwise it's like these two, I mean, to go back to what you're saying about Superman, it's these two broody characters, Superman and Batman, like huffing and puffing at each other, and then there's this full-blown situation, and in lands Wonder Woman to actually help get things done finally.
And yeah, that's one thing that impressed me about the aesthetic overall of the whole idealized female realm. Like, even the fight sequences in this movie had a more like graceful swiftness to them that didn't feel clunky and boring for the most part until, until it just got into the old patterns. But for the most part, like, the stylization of these characters is what made it.
Yes, the action was very well shot. Back to what I was getting at before, I do wonder, because it's a very typical superhero origin story, it does a million things that we've seen in other movies like this, like the Iron Man and Batman Begins and the Raimi Spider-Man, and I do wonder if the reason it kind of slides on that is because it is finally a superheroine, and we have a woman in that role. going through the hero's journey now, because it hit all those same beats. And the part you were talking about where she takes off the tunic and puts on the headband and goes up into no man's. And of course, there's the whole line in that where Chris Pine's like, you can't do it's no man's land. And she's like, well, I'm not a man. and goes up and into the mud fields. And that was around the hour mark. It's usually where you get those Superman or those superhero reveals and costumes. Yeah. So it does seem very formulaic that way, but there is a freshness to it. I think, and I don't say this as a disparagement, I think it's because it's finally a woman in the costume and at the head. And
Yeah, I mean, I do think there are certain... I wonder if... and it was hard to say. Like, I wonder if sometimes some of the things that I'm struggling with, it is because it's a woman and I feel like she should know better. But no, she's just doing the same thing. She started out with wrong hypotheses and then learned from her mistake and her failure and then came around to a better idea, which is about justice and about peace and about love. Right? She didn't start that way. And I think that's what I think... maybe because Wonder Woman to me is, and I think maybe this is the problem with Superman too, right? Superman is hope.
Right.
And that is absolutely not what he represents in this universe. Superman does not, I mean, maybe, I don't know, I didn't watch Batman v Superman, but
neither have I.
At least in Man of Steel, he sure as heck did not represent hope to me.
Yeah.
And the same thing, Wonder Woman represents justice and peace, and she starts out as, I hate to use the word warmonger, but like she wanted to learn to fight. She wanted to, where's the God killer? Where's all the things that create violence? I want to know more about these things that create violence.
I think that makes sense because she was raised in a warrior culture.
Yeah.
But there's no war where she is. Like, so it's all training. It's all practice. It's all, training with your sword and your shield, and you know that training with your aunt, she's not going to kill you.
Yeah.
And I think I do see that over the course of the film, where she gets into not just the politics of them fighting the war, but when they're actually heading off to France and she sees all the people without their limbs or bandaged up, and she goes into the trench and all these people there who are muddied and brutalized, and the villagers, and in that moment it sort of becomes, this is what the cost of war really looks like when you're actually in a war. So that did make sense to me. But you're right, though, it did show a development for her.
Yeah.
That it went from something that was very theoretical to, in the end, when she realizes it isn't just one source for all the ills of the world, because that's her thing. It's like, well, as soon as we get rid of Ares, everything will be peace and love and understanding. And it's like, well, no, there's no...
It's just another
there's
war.
There's no god of war.
Yeah. You're just waging another war of some kind. Yeah. Like, they're being trained as these warrior princesses, but it's like, this is what you'll have to do, like, if you ever become involved with a man. Like, just be ready for violence and, it's going to all be dependent on these skills.
I will say so it's funny, Jenny, you mentioned about how it is sort of, there is a certain amount of male gaze to this. And I'm not sure that I agree necessarily. I think that in general, it's, except for the one character who is sort of a Lothario, in general, it's the women who talk about how... strong or beautiful the other women are. It's not necessarily the men who do it. And even in the sort of, it is a superhero movie and there is a female lead and a male co-star. So of course there is a little bit of a sexual tension and a romance. And that's left very, it's not vague, it's clear that there's something there, but we don't have to see the whole, we're just allowed to go, oh, I see what's happening here now at this point. Okay, now they've become lovers.
But it's not on the front burner. Yeah.
But even that romance, and in this, by the same token of in being kind of on the sidelines, it's like, oh, well, she's hot and, they're naturally going to just do that anyway. So they didn't actually have some kind of a spiritual connection happening that seemed organic in that thing. It's like, okay, now we have to show that they just,
but he's above average.
Yeah.
right? Like, obviously, he's above average. So if she's going to get a prize, it's going to be the above average human male.
It's her.
And, and Chris Pine, I liked a lot. He's very much like an old matinee idol in this. And he knows enough not to step back and try to, you know, take or try to be the co-star. He knows she's the star and mm-hmm. that it's his responsibility to be, I hate to say this, the feminine role in what's a typical superhero drama. She's the one who's always saving him. She's the one mm-hmm. who's always taking charge, saying we have to do A, B, and C. And there's the scene in the alley where mm-hmm. the German spies have come for them, and he's trying to push her back. She's like, no, I'm not going back. And then the German fires the shot, and she sticks her bracelets out, and it pings off the bracelet. Yeah. And she's like, and he's like, okay, maybe I won't hold you back.
Go at it. That's fine. Yeah.
So I mean, there is little touches like that I did appreciate. I also would, you know, I think we're inevitably going to get a sequel to this, but I mean, there's also little things I like. She has like this little bat cave in the Louvre that I think is with all these like old weapons and things, which are pretty great. I love the music in this too, and I think that that's something where the DC movies excel
See,
where the Marvel
stone. See, it's interesting. I did not notice the score at all, which I know for some people they think, well, it's good. You shouldn't notice the score because it shouldn't stick out. But score is something I pay quite a lot of attention to and listen for. And I really didn't notice it. I realized it at the end when we were watching the credits. I was like, oh, were there any good music cues? I did not notice at all.
It was seamless.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like too much of a one kind of genre film with the mm-hmm. score. Like,
yeah. Well, I did like they included the Hans Zimmer Wonder Woman theme, which I know you guys didn't because mm-hmm. you didn't see Batman v Superman, but was introduced in Batman v Superman. And it's the guitar riff. That and it's
but it's, that's great. Could you do that again? No,
I am not a musical expert, but no, that's the music they play when she comes in Batman mm-hmm. v Superman. It's this like wicked rockin' guitar riff, mm-hmm. and I was ready to applaud when she's like riding on horseback through the village town and is playing the guitar riff and she's kicking butt. And I think if there is. You know, we've done a kind of like a super academic analysis
of a popcorn movie.
But just on the surface of it, of like watching a hero be badass.
Yep.
That's where this
excels.
Really great. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
like but what I was going to just finish with my ideas about the male gaze, too, was that the relationship that they had and how he's sort of like the secondary factor. But everything at the end did rely on their love. Like, it wasn't like in a male superhero movie, the romance is always secondary. In this movie, it is the like main thing that brings everything together at the end. Mm-hmm. So she still kind of depended on that.
I will say it's not.
It was like her without coming
getting
of age.
Without getting into spoils, it wasn't just that relationship, but it was also the relationship with the other people in her little unit. That too, but you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah,
that it did seem kind of
like at the heart of it is like
their
love.
I didn't really see it that way. Yeah. I felt it was love of humanity, right? And she could look around at all the friends that she had made mm-hmm. and see what they were sacrificing.
Yes.
To mm-hmm. save a flawed group of people, right? And so she could realize, it's about love of each other and love of humanity mm-hmm. and love of these flawed things.
And to prove that, she does mm-hmm. let one of the main bad guys go.
Yeah.
She doesn't, like, there's a moment where she could, like, swat them, and I don't want to go into too great a detail, but there's a moment where she could have ridded the earth of this terrible person forever, and she stops.
And she's prevented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is a positive message in that, gladly. And I think it's a great popcorn movie. I think mm-hmm. it's great. And I do want to address your male gaze comment, because there was a review, and I can't remember who wrote it, but it was a bit of controversy this past weekend, but somebody wrote a review where it's like, I couldn't salivate over Gal Gadot because it was a woman who shot this movie. So there was no real moment where I could just like bang my fists on the table and howl at her beautiful.
She avoided those
hotness.
Obvious
yeah,
things.
It's yeah. That's you know, you say there was, you mentioned the male gaze, but for some reviewers, there's obviously not enough male gaze.
Well, it's written by a male, and
that's
so
true too. Yeah,
that's what I mean. It's like embedded into kind of the design of the whole thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Despite having even been directed by a woman.
Yeah.
I do want to mention, so I always stay for all of the credits at every movie I see.
Yeah,
I think
me too.
That it's it's important. A lot of people put work, sometimes years of work, into this. And
yes,
the
absolutely.
Least I can do is stay an extra 5 minutes and watch their name crawl across
the
screen.
Music plays.
Yeah. So at the very end, there's a special thank you to George Perez, who I think is the current artist on Wonder Woman, or most, or
well,
fairly
he's,
recent.
I think he was the artist who did her big relaunch in
yeah,
the 80s.
The, okay.
Yeah.
But then there was a list of a variety of other people who have worked on Wonder Woman comics in the past as either artists or writers. And there was a serious lack of Darwyn Cook, who is my favorite illustrator of Wonder Woman ever. Ever. And I noticed that, and it made me want to cry.
Canadian
Not only
too?
That, because he's Canadian, and he passed away just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I have Darwyn Cook Wonder Woman stuff everywhere because I think that he made her so beautiful and strong and just so much happiness and joy and hope in her face while also just being so strong. And I'm like, why is his name not there? Why is he not being thanked for all of the great work that he did with his character?
Mm.
It upset me.
Well, again, to revisit something Jenna said, you know that as someone who's like steeply in the in the material, I think he did a Justice League book, which is where he did his Wonder Woman. I don't think he worked on the Wonder Woman book.
No,
so
it was
maybe that's why. I mean, I don't think it was something evil, but that he was not mentioned. But.
Ugh.
But you know, it's
my favorite version of Wonder Woman.
I'm glad you mentioned him here because you know he is a great artist and sorely missed. And I did notice his passing a couple of years ago. I didn't get. I wrote something for Nerd Bastards for it because I guess I saw it on social media or something. And I didn't see anything on really any of the major comic book sites, which it just seemed to happen, which is also sad. So I think what we're saying is, to wrap this up in a bow-ish thing, is that...
on top of a pretty lady's head?
Sure. It's a fun movie. Maybe some interesting messages in it. Maybe not some great messages in it. But I think... I agree with you, Candace. It's not going to solve the core problems. Like, nobody's going to be... No. You're not going to be hearing this week about all these great new female-directed, female action star movies being made. I guess, you know, you look at the past several years, you got Hunger Games, which is basically a superhero movie, despite everything, you know. Lucy, speaking of Scarlett Johansson, which was a superhero movie, if not in name, because she had superpowers in that movie. It just seems again and again... women have to prove for the first time that there's a general audience for women-directed, women-led popcorn action movies, and Wonder Woman will be one of them. And
And it's a very an interesting political text, so it also appeals to somebody like academics like me who are going to sit and have a conversation about some of the problematic things there.
Absolutely.
And still be, you know, very stimulated and entertained.
I think that's the best way to sum it up, and that will be how we have to sum it up, because that's it for this inaugural edition of End Credits, and we hope you liked it very much. And if you did like it, it will be available to hear again on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. There is also a social media feed and feeds for this social media End Credits Radio Show on Facebook, End Credits Radio on Twitter. Jenna, where can people find more of your work or more of your thoughts?
Well, I have an alternative approach to my use of social media, so it's a little bit of a game. You'd have to bring yourself to the realization that not only is anything possible, but anything is popsicle.
Well done.
Puzzle.
Candace?
You can find me online at CINN48 everywhere. Just check it out. You can also listen to more of my thoughts on things at the Village Podcast, which is with the bookshelf. So if you go to bookshelf.ca, stories from the Village, and you'll find our podcast there.
And I write about movies, TV shows, and other nerdy stuff every day at nerdbastards.com. And I will be back on CFRU Thursday at 5 p.m. for the news and politics on Open Source's Guelph. And that is with my partner there, Scotty Hertz. You can stay tuned to more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. And we will be back here next Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. for more end credits. Almost made it through the show without too many hiccups, but we'll have another show next week to see how I can screw it up then. But we'll be back next Wednesday at 8. See you then.